Hello, everybody. This is Creating Websites with Ruby on Rails. I am Tommy MacWilliam. I will be your conductor for the day. And so today we're going to learn about three things. First, a little bit on the Ruby programming language. What is it, how it differs from some other languages we've looked at this semester. MVC, so what is that, and why should we be using it? And finally, a lot about Rails itself and how to create websites with Rails. So just a quick disclaimer, creating awesome web applications is not a spectator sport. So first, some setup. So first, you'll want to download the Ruby programming language itself. So this link is good. I would recommend downloading version 1.9.2. That's the version I'll be using throughout this seminar. Then after you install that, if you want to open up a terminal, the command line, and just type in gem install Rails, and this will download the entire Rails runtime for you and all the files that you're going to need to work with Rails. So if you ever run into some error messages or anything like that while you're installing, if you have a problem with something called SQLite, if you're on Windows, you just want to go to this link, download a DLL file, and put that inside of the Ruby bin folder. So if you're on Windows, you're probably installed to C Ruby 192 bin, so just put the DLL in there. If you're running a Mac or another operating system, just make sure you've installed these packages, but on a Mac, they should be installed for you, so you shouldn't have any problems. If you get any other error messages, you know, Google is your best friend. You're definitely not the first person to have trouble installing something like this. So there'll be plenty of tutorials and troubleshooting guides. So now Ruby. So what is Ruby? So Wikipedia says that Ruby is a dynamic, reflective, general-purpose, object-oriented programming language. A lot of words. But basically, all that means is that Ruby wants you to help get stuff done. It has a very clean, readable, and intuitive syntax, which is definitely unlike anything we've seen this semester. You don't have to worry about low-level stuff, which pointers and all that fun stuff. And it has a huge standard library. There are plenty of functions that do probably what you need to do for you, and they're all 100% documented with code examples and the like. So just in C, so this is, you know, what your Hello World program is going to look like, in case you forgot. And so this is a Hello World program in Ruby. It's just one line of code, and it's just three words. So this is kind of why I prefer Ruby to a language like C. So some other minor syntactic differences with Ruby. No more curly braces. You don't have to worry about those. Instead, you have this end keyword. So if you were to say if something, and instead of having a curly brace at the end, you would just type the word end. There's also no more semicolons, so no more compiler errors when you forget a semicolon. Parentheses for function arguments are totally optional. So a lot of times, to increase readability, you won't see parentheses around arguments. You just separate them with commas, and Ruby will know that you're calling a function. If you're calling a function without any parentheses, so if you just have a function that's going to calculate something, you don't need to give it any arguments, you can just type the name of the function without the parentheses, and Ruby's going to know to actually call that function. So commenting is a little different. We're going to use a single hash for a single line comment instead of the double forward slashes. And for multi-line comments, we're going to use equals begin and equals end. And that'll be a multi-line comment. And finally, we also have this else if keyword, combining the two words instead of saying else if. I don't know. It's cool. So the real big difference between Ruby and C is Ruby is an interpreted language. So just like PHP, you don't have to compile it. You're just going to write code and then run it. And so like PHP, Ruby is also dynamically typed. So when you're specifying variables and functions, you don't need to give them types. So here is an example function in Ruby. So we're using the def keyword, which is just like function in JavaScript. So we're saying we have this function, and we don't care what type it is. It's taking one argument called name, and we don't care what type that is either. Ruby's going to figure that out for us. So this function is just going to say puts hello plus name. And so in Ruby, the string concatenation, just like JavaScript, is done with the plus operator. So this will say hello and then whatever argument you give it. And finally, this end keyword, which is used instead of the ending curly brace. So a bit on Ruby arrays, which are really cool. So just like JavaScript, they don't have a fixed size, and they can contain multiple types. So here I have an array of two integers and a string. So you access the first element of the array, just like you would in any other language with those square brackets. Just like in JavaScript, you have these methods to add and remove elements from the array. So to add a new element to the array, you would just say array.push, and then you'd say what element you want to add to the array. To get the value of the first element and remove it from the list, are you going to use pop and shift, just like in JavaScript? And then to concatenate two arrays, we can actually use the plus operator. So if I said numbers plus 5, 6, 7, what I'd get back is an array that was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7. So Ruby also, like PHP, has built-in support for these hash tables. So this is a syntax in Ruby. You're going to start off your hash table or associative array, whatever you want to call it, with the curly brace. And then you're going to have a colon before the name of your key. So here I have a hash table of size 2. It has a name property, and it has a rank property. So notice these are different types, which is AOK in Ruby. So to access the value of the name key, I would just say TF and then name. And so that would give back the string Tommy. If I want to add something new to the hash table, I could just say TF and then type in what my new key would be and then give it some value. So with this line, I've just added the value hi, and its key is coolness. And so those are Ruby hashes. And so finally, we have something called blocks in Ruby. And so these are definitely a different approach than what we've seen so far this semester to something like iterating over an array. So a block is basically a piece of code that you're giving as an argument to a function. So every array has this built-in function called each. And it's going to take a single block or a function as an argument. So this block is going to be called on every element of the array individually. So if you wanted to do something like print out an array, you would say numbers.each, and you say do number, and then this puts number would print out every element of the array. So I think this is definitely really easy to read. Like, you can actually read it as if it were English. So numbers each, so okay, so you're going to put each number, and then you're done. And so the argument to the block, in this case I'm calling it number, and that argument is going to represent each element of the array, is just going to be specified inside these vertical pipes. So you saw those for OR and a lot of other languages. Here they're going to be used to create an argument to your block. So that's just a quick primer on the differences between Ruby and other languages. You'll notice that there really aren't too many, and you can jump right into Ruby. If you really want to learn more about Ruby specifically, there's plenty of resources online. RubyDoc.org has a ton of stuff, including a free ebook. It's a comprehensive introduction to the Ruby programming language. And this complete documentation for the standard library, so every function that's built into Ruby, what it does, and a code example of it being used, is present at this RubyDoc.org. So now MVC. So MVC stands for Model View Controller. And so this is something called a design pattern. So it's a solution to a common, really general problem. So in this case, we're answering the question, how should I structure and organize my web application? And so MVC is really common these days, and it's used by other frameworks like KPHP and also the iOS SDK. So all the iPhone and iPod apps that are written are actually utilizing this Model View Controller design pattern. So the Model View Controller is a way of separating your programming logic from the design of your application. So there's three parts. The first is the model. So the model is going to be the database in your application, you know, the back end. And it basically allows you to abstract away all of these SQL queries by accessing your database as if it were an object. So properties of that object would represent something like columns in your database. And then you can manipulate them without typing out the SQL statement, you know, update this column, set this equal to this. You would just say, you know, your model dot column equals this, and it's going to do everything for you. So the view is the user interface of your application, so what the user actually sees. So in the case of a Rails application, this is going to be the HTML pages, the JavaScript, the CSS style sheets. And finally, the controller bridges the gap between the model and the view. So the view can send the controller data. So I say, you know, I want to look at this thing from the database. And the controller says, OK, the view told me I needed this. I'm going to ask the model for it. It's going to get an answer from the model and then send that right to the view. And so now you've totally separated your HTML and your Ruby. So you can have one person in your group in charge of, you know, web design and user interface, and then another person in charge of the actual logic behind your application. And you can do everything totally separate. Your Ruby programmer doesn't need to be an expert in HTML, and the person doing web design doesn't need to know any Ruby. And so it also allows you to maximize code reusability. So if you have a controller, you can reuse that same controller to do other things. Or if you have a certain view, like something like displaying a blog post, if you want to display something else other than a blog post, you can just reuse that view instead of writing a whole new one, since it's going to be a lot of shared code. So let's look at actually creating a Rails application. So in this seminar, we're going to create a blog in Rails. So we're going to be able to add new posts, we're going to be able to edit posts, comment on posts, and delete posts. So to create a new application in Ruby on Rails, we're going to open up a terminal or a command line, and we're going to type in Rails new, and then the name of our application. So in this case, we're just going to call our application blog. So to create it, we're just going to run Rails new blog. So here's my terminal, and I'm just going to say Rails new blog, hit enter. And so Ruby just created our new application. It set up a skeleton, and we're going to look at all of these files that were just created for us in a bit. So now we just need to make sure that everything is installed correctly. So I mentioned before, like, you may run into these problems. If you just run the simple command bundle install, that's going to take care of all of those problems for you. And so it's going to download any dependencies and just make sure everything is good to go before you start writing your Ruby application. So I've already done that, and so now we have our application. We don't have any problems with it, and we can start using it. So if you'll notice what was created for us, we have this directory that Ruby created for us called app. And so this is where all of our application code is going to go. This config directory is going to be different configurations, like the password to your database or the table names. And this public folder is going to be everything like your JavaScript files, your images, and basically the equivalent of the public HTML that we looked at before. So you notice that we didn't have to create any of those folders for us, right? Ruby basically decided how we should organize a web application, and we just kind of go with it. So Ruby is based on this idea of resources. So our blog is going to need to have a post, right? And so that's going to be something that needs to be created, viewed, edited, and deleted. So it's going to need its own model, its own controller, and its own views for each of these things we can do to it. So this post is called a resource, which is basically a single thing that can be manipulated and represented in a database. So in MySQL, that would be like a table. So before we create this resource, we should decide what fields the database is going to have. So for now, let's just give a post a title and some content. So to create a resource, we're going to say Rails generate scaffold. Then we're going to have the name of our resource. In this case, we're just going to call it post. And then we're going to list out the columns we want in our database. So using the scaffold tells Rails, OK, I want you to create the model, view, and controller all for me. I don't want to bother doing that separately. So if we just run this in our terminal, we say Rails generate scaffold. We're going to call it a post. It's going to have a title, string, and content, which is text. So you notice that Rails also takes care of abstracting away MySQL things like a varchar. Like, you notice we just said a title is going to be a string. So Rails is going to know what you mean, and it's going to assign, you know, the appropriately sized varchar field in your MySQL database. So we just hit enter. And I need to make sure I'm actually in the right folder. So if we run this, Rails generate scaffold. Ruby's going to crank. And then, it just generated all of these files for us. So now that we have our resource, right, we're going to have to go into PHP MyAdmin and create the right table and then add the fields and all that stuff, right? No, Rails does that for you too. So we just created all these files. So for Rails to update the MySQL database for you, we can just run rake db migrate. So this rake is, of course, a funny pun. Instead of typing make, we call it rake, you know, R for Ruby. So you have this thing called a rake file. And inside of that rake file, which is, you know, the equivalent of a make file, it's predefined all of these things for Ruby to do for you. So saying db migrate is going to update your database for you based on all of the resources you've created. So we just run rake db migrate, and we just created our MySQL table with all the right columns. They're all very good types for us, and we didn't have to go through that all of that through it ourselves. So here the terminal window said we've created a new post. It gives you how long it takes, just in case you're interested. Okay, so now we've created this resource, and we've created this database table. So now let's just check out, like, how far into the application we are. You know, we probably still have a lot to code. So to run your application, we're going to start the Ruby on Rails server. So we're going to say Rails server. Okay, so now we have our server all up and running, and we can access our website at localhost, and then this port number is 3000. So Rails just reserves this special port. So it says, whenever you run Rails server, your server is going to be accessed through port 3000. So if we open up our web browser and just check out localhost 3000, we see that we're good to go. We're running Rails. If we click this link, we can have all these nice version numbers and things like that. So since we created a resource called posts, let's go to localhost 3000/posts. Okay, so this looks pretty cool. So we have like a listing post. We don't have any posts yet. So you notice that Ruby made this nice link for us called new post. So let's click on new post. Wow, all right, check this out. So Ruby generated all these HTML forms for us. All right, so let's call this post like new post. All right, so we can say, all right, so like we filled out these forms, and now we have this create post button. All right, so like there's no way that like it's gonna like do all the database stuff for us. It's probably just generated the HTML. So let's just click create post. Oh, okay, post was successfully created. Okay, so it actually just created a post, and now it's in the database. All right, so now let's try to edit this post. This isn't gonna work. Okay, so let's say this is. So let's edit the post, and we click update post. And yeah, Ruby actually does that for us too. To delete the post, we have this destroy link. We click it. Are you sure? It even asks us. And we just deleted the post. So yeah, we actually just wrote a blog without writing a single line of code. And this is why Rails is awesome. So we did four things on the command line. Like that took like 10 seconds, right? So that's awesome. I think Will Farrell puts it best.
I got a message for all of them, right? Shake and bake.
What does that do? Did that blow your mind?
That just happened.
What did that
do? Yes, it did. Okay, so that was really sweet, and we probably shouldn't submit that as our final project before we actually take a look at what Rails did for us. And so you'll notice that we created a model, some views, and some controllers. So first, the models. So the model is going to be really, really simple. So our posts aren't really doing anything special, right? They're just being created. They're being saved to the database. That's pretty standard. So if we look at the model file, so let's open up text editor. So if we go into our blog folder, and we go into the app folder, which is where all our application is, I don't know if I can make this any bigger. So we're going to go into the app folder. We're going to go into the models folder inside of the app folder, and we're going to open up this only one file there, and it's called post.rb. And so this is the model. This is all it is. It's just an empty class. So notice that we're inheriting from this other class called ActiveRecordBase. Now, you don't really need to know what that class is. Just know that this is handling all of the saving and the deleting for us. So our class right now doesn't do anything else. So the controller is actually going to be a little more complicated. So the way Rails controllers work is each function in the controller corresponds to a single user action. So something like creating a post is going to have its own function in the controller, which makes sense. So each function in the controller is going to map to a different URL. So if you notice when we're looking at our application, when we're creating a new post, you'll notice the URL is /post/new. And so now if we look at the controller, so we're going to go into the controllers folder inside of the app folder, and we have this postsController.rb. And so now this is the controller that Ruby created for us. So now you notice the new function is right here. So this corresponds to the URL posts new. And so this contains the logic for creating a new post. So just a few things before I look at the functions themselves. Like PHP has these special get and post arrays to handle things like getting form submission data or things out of the URL, Rails has something called the params. So this is a hash table, and it's get and post things are not separated. They're both accessed using the same hash table. So if a user makes a request to the URL posts edit 1, then it's going to store this 1, what the user is asking for, in the ID field. So that's something that Rails handles for us. So to pass a variable to a view from the controller, So you'll notice, remember, the controller is the bridge between the model and the view. So for the controller to send data to the view, all you have to do is declare a variable with the at before its name. And then that variable will automatically be sent to the view for you. So to create a new instance of the post class, Ruby syntax is going to be the name of the class, dot new. And so that's going to create a new instance of the post class, so which is basically our new post. And so every instance of the post class is going to have this function called save. And so this save function is going to take care of putting it into the database for you. You don't need to pass it any SQL queries. You don't have to distinguish between an insert and an update. Save is going to do all of that for you. And so these are all the functions that were created in our controller. So we have the index function, which is the first thing we saw. And that's going to get all the posts inside of our database and just pass them on to the view. So if you look at the code for index, that's all we're doing. So this post is our model, and it has a special function called all. And that's just going to say select everything from the database. And so now we're declaring this post with the app before its name. So we're saying this array of posts is going to be sent out to our view so it can use it. The show function is going to get a single post with the ID specified in its URL. So it's going to be a numerical ID. And it's just going to pass it to the view. So if you look down at show, we also have this function called find. And so that's going to get the singular post with the given ID. So like I said before, params is going to take care of parsing all the URL stuff for us. And this ID field is the ID of the post that we want to look at. So this new function, all it's going to do is it's going to create a blank post object and then send that over to the view. So the view is going to contain all of the HTML that will be filled in and then saved into the object we create. So right now, we just want a blank one because we're creating a new post. So we don't want to send the new form any data. We just want to send it a blank post that the view is going to fill in and send back to the controller. So the edit is going to get the data from the database and send it to the same view. And so we're going to now populate those HTML forms with the values from the database. So again, that's something Rails does for you. You just send it this one variable called post, and the view knows, OK, I should be editing a post this time, so I'm going to fill in all of those HTML forms for you. So we have three more. So one is for create. And so this is the function that's going to be called after the user presses that create button. So when the user presses that create button, it's going to send over all of that form data. And so we want to create a new post and save it to our database. And so Ruby also has this great feature. Instead of accessing all of those fields individually, you can just access them all at once using this post field. So params post contains everything that a post needs to exist. So it has, right now, our title and our content. So if we just call post.new and give it all of that data, Ruby's going to populate all of the fields for us. And so here we have the post save, and this is just some error handling. So if that was successful, we're just going to say it was successfully created. We also have the update function. And so this is the function that's called after the user clicks edit on a post, changes all the fields, and then clicks that update post button. And so the same thing we're going to do here. We're going to get the existing post from the database with the ID the user gave us. And then we're going to call this update attributes function. And so what that's going to do is it's going to say, OK, the user has modified some fields. I'm not going to worry about which ones the user modified and didn't modify. We're just going to overwrite that data with the SQL update query. And so now just calling that function is going to fix everything in our database for us. So finally, the destroy function is just going to delete a post. And so to do that, we're just going to get it out of the database and then call the destroy function on it. And so that's going to take care of the SQL delete query. And so those are all the functions that were created for us. And so now we're going to take a look at the views that were, again, created for us. So each user action, like it has a function in each controller, also has its own view file. And so these are going to end in ERB, for embedded Ruby. So just like PHP uses this bracket question mark thing to embed PHP code in HTML, Ruby just uses the bracket percent sign. And so a couple useful functions you'll see in views. The first is the link to function. So this is going to generate an anchor tag for you, handling all of the href stuff. So if you say link to and then you give it a resource, so if we said link to and then like at post, then it's automatically going to generate the URL for the show function for that resource. So instead of like concatenating a bunch of strings and figuring out what the ID is, we can just say link to and then give it that post object, and Ruby's going to spit out the anchor tag for us. We can also say link to, and then we can get the URLs for the edit actions and for the show actions. So we have these built-in variables called edit, resource, path. When we created a post, this is going to say edit, post, path. And so that's a function that Ruby created for us, and it's just going to spit out the URL for the edit action on a single post. And we also have this function called form4. And so that's going to take care of generating all of the HTML for a form for us. We don't have to worry about what the method and action attributes are for generating a submit button. That's going to take care of all of that for us. So we have four view files. We can look at all of the posts. So that's going to be the index.erb file. And so this file is going to use a block to iterate over all the posts that were passed to it by the controller. So if we take a look at that file, we're going to go into our app folder. And inside of that app folder, there's a folder called views. So if we open that up, there's another folder called posts, so all of the views for the posts. And now we have our four view files. So if we open up index.html.erb, so it's just using an HTML table to display what we were looking at before. And so here is the Ruby block. So the controller, if you remember, passed it this variable called @posts. So now this is an array of all the posts in our database. So we call this each function. And for every post, we're going to print out a row in the table that has the post title, the post content. And then we're going to use this link to function to create links to view the post and to edit the post. And so we also have to make sure we have this end tag. So just like in PHP, we could say while something and then a colon. And then down at the bottom, we could say end while. Ruby's going to have the same deal, except we just need that single end keyword to get out of the each function. So edit.html.erb, that's just going to render an HTML form for us, and it's going to fill up that form with values from an already existing post. So to look at that file, we're going to go back into our views folder, and we're going to check out edit.html.erb. So this is really simple. It's just four lines. So we can just tell Ruby, okay, we're just going to render a form, and it's going to be filled up automatically for us. We don't have to worry about checking what the values were and setting the value attributes in our input elements. We can just say render form, and Ruby says, OK, I know you need a form for the post. I'm going to make that for you. And so new.html.erb looks just like this. We're just going to render a form. So here we go. Same deal. We're just saying render a form. And finally, the show view is going to basically display all of the columns in our table. So here, it was given a single variable called @post. So that's a single instance of a post. And so to output its title, just like in PHP, if we had this equal sign after the question mark, it would be a shortcut for print out this. So Ruby's the same deal. If we have this equal sign after our percent sign, it's just going to print out the title of the post. And so then we're also printing out the content of the post. And so now that's our view for viewing a single post. So any questions so far on MVC or the model views or controllers? OK. So now let's look at adding some functionality to our Rails application. So first, let's give the ability for users to search all posts by a certain author. So in order to do that, we first need to add the author field to our post resource. Then that's going to need a new function in our controller, and it's going to need its own view to display the results. So we're going to need to make a change to our database, right? We have this table, and we don't have a field for author. So this is in Ruby, this is called a migration. So this is when we update our database to be some new database. So again, Ruby is going to do all of this for you. So if we want to add a column to a database, we're going to say Rails generate migration. So before we said Rails generate scaffold, now we're generating a single migration. And we're going to say add some column to some table, and then we're going to give it what type of column it is. We can also do the same thing for removing a single column. So we just say Rails generate migration, and then we're going to say remove some column from some table. So to add our new author column, all we have to do is say Rails generate migration. So we're going to add author to posts. So we have a table called posts. We want to give it an author field. And that author is just going to be a string. So let's run that. So we'll shut down our server. And now we want to say Rails generate migration. So we're going to say add author to posts. And the author field is going to be a string. So we run that, and it created the migration for us. So now if we just say rake db migrate again, here we say we added the author to the post. We added a column into the post table called author, and it's a string. And our database is now good to go. So now we need to implement the controller functionality. So when we're searching for a certain author, the user is going to go to a URL with author in it. So we're going to say some post number or some author name, and then we're going to say slash author to say, OK, Rails, I'm giving you an author name this time, not a numerical post ID. So I want all the authors for that post. So the post class already has in this built-in function called where. So this is going to query the database with like a select something where something else equals query for us. And so we're just going to pass it in a single hash table where the field or the column in our database is going to be the key. And then what we're searching for is going to be the value. So we just need to say we're going to send this array called posts to the view. And we're going to say get all the posts where the author is the author that we're given in the URL. So let's open up our controller again. And now we can add that. So let's just copy this function, index. So we copied that. And now we can paste that right here. So we want to call this function author. And instead of getting all the posts, we just want to get the posts where some author is going to equal the name of the author that we were given in the URL. And so there we go. That's it. That will search our database for all the posts from a given author. So now we also need a view to display these results. So to do that, we can actually just reuse the index view, because the index view just handled displaying all of the posts. So we can just reuse that to display all the posts by a given author. So if we go back into app, views, posts, and we'll open up this index view. So now let's modify the view so it takes into account the author name. So we're going to add a new heading to our table for the author. And so down here, we're just going to add a new cell for the author name. And so now when we're displaying all the posts, it's also going to display the authors of the posts. So now we can save this as our author view. So if we go to File, Save As, and we call this file author.html.erb, because y'all remember we called this function author. So now this function is going to know to go to this view. So you'll notice that when we looked at the show and edit views, it just said this render form, and that rendered the entire form for us. So here Rails is utilizing what's called a partial. And so this is just a small chunk of reusable view code. So in this case, it's just the form. We're going to use the same HTML to create a new post and to edit a post. So we're just going to create that form once instead of typing it twice in two different views. So if you look inside of our views folder, we have this file called _form.html.erb. And so here is where it's taking care of the actual displaying of the form. So you notice here we have this div class field. And so Ruby has these functions for creating the input elements for us. So to create one from the author, we can just copy and paste the same code that it made for the title. And instead of saying title, we want to say author. So that's it. So now when we look at the form on both the show view and the edit view, it's just going to render this partial, and we just changed it to have fields for the author. So you'll notice how our actions have been magically mapped to these controller functions. So the way Ruby does that is called routing. So there's this special file in the config folder called routes.rb. And that's going to say, OK, when you get this to this URL, you want to call this function in the controller. So since we just created a new controller action, we want to add that to our routes. So let's open up the routes file. So this is in app. I'm sorry, it's in our root folder, and we're going to go into a folder called config. And we have this file called routes.rb. And so right now, this resources function is just a shortcut. So that's going to say, OK, handle the new function, the show function. Basically, all of the functions that Ruby generated for us, they're all mapped using the single resources function. So this file is actually really handy in that it gives you a bunch of examples of how to add new functions. So here, this is the syntax you want to follow. So it says, OK, you want to say do member, and then each of those member functions are going to be the additional things we added to our controller. So we want to say resources do, and we want to add some new member functions, so some other functions in addition to show and edit to this controller. So we're going to say member do, and then we want to say get an author. So we're going to access, we're going to look at authors using an HTTP GET request, right? So post is for submitting forms. We're not submitting anything, we're just looking at data. And so we're going to say get and then the name of our function. So this is going to handle translating all the URLs for us. So if you ever want to look at all of the URLs your application has, you can just run this command rake routes. And so here you'll notice we added one called author, and that's the first one listed here. So we have posts, and then we have the ID, so whatever the author we're going to be looking for, and then we're just going to say author. And so now Rails knows that I should call the author function inside of the posts controller. So our routes are all set up correctly now. So now let's take a look at what we just did. So if we run Rails server again, so every time we edit our code, we need to stop the server, we need to edit the code, and then restart the server. So our server is up and running. OK, so you don't have any posts, but you'll notice now the author field is present. So if we click on new post, we can say new post, Tommy. So we're going to create a new post really quickly. So we click on create post, and now we have the author field inside of our database. So let's just create another new post with a different author. So we create post. OK, so now we have two different posts with two different authors. So now to utilize the author function we just created, we're going to say post, now we're going to say slash Tommy, and then slash author. And so now we're only looking at all the posts by that author. Pretty simple. And so one more feature that's going to take a little more work is giving the users the ability to comment on posts. So when we added the authors field, all we needed to do was modify an existing model, right? Comments, though, are going to need a new model, right? We should have a new table in our database just for comments. So just like before, we're going to run this Rails generate scaffold command. So we're going to shut down our server. We're going to say Rails generate scaffold. And so this time, we want to call our table comments. So we're going to say comment. And so we're going to need an author of a comment. We're going to need a field called content for what the comment actually says. And then finally, we need a way to associate a comment with a post, right? So when you comment on something, you're commenting on a specific post. And so we're going to use this references type to say that we need to link this single row in our table to a specific row in our comments database. So we run that. It just created the model view and controller for us. And let's just run rake db migrate. And so here we go. It created a new table for us called comments with all those fields we just specified. So whenever we fetch a post from the database, right, we should also fetch all of its associated comments, right, so we can pass them to the same view. And so Rails is also going to do all of this for us. So to do that, we need to update the models for the post and comment now. And so a post has many comments, right? A single post can have several or many comments. A comment, however, belongs to a single post. So we literally just add this into our models. So our routes were changed because we ran a migrate. So if we open up the new comment model, so I'm in app models, and we have this new file called comment.rb, and you'll notice this belongs to relationship has already been set up for us. So you say belongs to, and then a colon, and then the name of the model that it belongs to. So we need to add this has many for the post. So we're going to say a post has many, and then comments. One of my favorite features of Rails is it actually takes care of pluralization for you. So if you say have a table called person, you would say has many people, not has many persons, just because Rails really thought of everything. So we can save that model. So now Rails knows, OK, so whenever I have a post, I should also look in my comments table to get all the comments associated with a single post. So we also need to update our routes, right? So whenever we're looking at a post, we can't look at comments from another post. And a comment can't exist without a post. So we need to update our routes to reflect that. So if we open up our routes file again, so we're going to go into blog config, and then routes.rb. You'll see here that it created this resources comments automatically for us. So right now, what this is going to do is it's going to allow a comment to exist without a post. So we just want to move that into our posts resources. So we just copied and pasted that one line and just put it inside of the posts. So now Rails knows that a post is going to have comments, and a comment has to have a post. All right. So now we should also update our views. So we need to do two things. One, we need a form for users to submit a new comment. And when we view a post, we should also display all of the existing comments. So we're only going to need to change one view file, and that's going to be the view for looking at a blog post. So this is going to be the show.erb file. So we can use this form HTML ERB as a starting point, right? So that's just kind of an example of the syntax for using the form for function. So let's open that up. So we're going to go into blog, app, views, posts, and then this form file. So let's just copy and paste everything inside of this file. So now we can open up the show view. So this is going to be the view that's called whenever we're viewing a single blog post, and that's where we want our submit comment form to go. So let's just paste everything we just saw in the form partial into our show view. So we can just get rid of this error handling stuff for now. And so you'll notice we have a form for a single post. And so we don't want a form for a post anymore. We want a form for a comment. And so to change that, we need to say post, and now we need to say at post, comments, and build. So the syntax here is a little weird, but the reason for it is because, as we said before, a comment can't exist without a post, and we haven't created a new comment yet, and so we need to call this build function. All right, so now we just need to update the fields of the form. So instead of having a title, we want an author for a comment. Oh, I could have just used that one. So let's get rid of this. And so now we're going to have our big text box for the content of the comment. So we also called our posts text content, so we can just leave this the same. All right, so now we've created a form for users to submit comments to a post. So we also need to display all of the comments that already exist in a certain post. And so we can use the index file as a starting point. So you'll remember that this view is going to display all of the posts. And it's going to do that with a block. So we're going to say at post.each, and we're going to iterate over the posts. So to iterate over the comments, so we can say comments. So to iterate over the comments, and saying instead of saying post.each, we're going to say at post.comments.each. So Ruby knows that each post has many comments, and so it creates this property inside the post object called comments, and that's an array of all the comments in that post. So we're going to say do comment. So now we're iterating over all of those comments, and we're accessing each individual comment with a variable called comment. So we also need to say end. And so now we have our comment, and we just want to display it to the user. So we can say something like, so the author of the comment, so comment.author, says, and then we can have the actual text of the comment. So comment.content inside of the p tag. And so now we're outputting the name of the author using the author field, and then we're saying what the actual content of the author of the comment was with the comment field. So now we should also label our form. We can say something like create a comment. Okay. So now we've handled users creating a new comment and viewing comments on an existing post with our views. So finally, we just need to update our controller so that these comments are actually saved to the database tied to the right post. So if you'll remember, when we modified that form for function, we changed that so it would submit to the comments controller instead of the posts controller. So that's the file that we're going to need to be modifying. So that form is going to submit to the create function inside of the comments controller. So let's open up the controller for comments. So we're going to go into blog, app, controllers, and now we have this comments controller. So now let's scroll down to the create function, which is already created for us. And so we can just delete everything that's already there because we don't want to just save a comment to the database. Okay. So the first thing we need to do is we need to find out what post is being commented on. And so to do that, we can just query our database with at post equals post dot find. Now we can't just say params ID anymore, right? Because that would be the ID of the comment, not the ID of the post. So because we set up our routes, we actually have this special field called post ID already set up for us. So Rails says, OK, I'm just going to send you the ID of the post that you're commenting on, and I'm going to put it inside of this post ID field. So you didn't have to do anything about URL parsing or figuring out what post the user just commented on. That was done for you. So then we need to associate this comment with a post. So we just got an object representing that post, and it has that field called comments. So to add a new comment to that array, we're going to say at post.comments. And now we're going to call the create function. And so we're just going to send that all of the data from our comment form. So just like we did before, all the submitted form data is stored inside of params comment. So that's shorthand for getting both of those fields and just putting them into one that the Ruby controller can handle. All right, so now we've associated this comment with the post. We just need to save it to the database. So we can just say at post save. And so now that handled all of the update for us. And so now we just want to redirect the user to the post he just commented on. So by default, this is just going to send us to the comments create view, right? And so that's not really what we want. We want to bring the user back to the post he just commented on so you know he can view his new post. So we're going to use the redirect, So we're going to use the redirect to function. And so that's going to bring the user back to the post he just commented on. OK. So now we should be good to go. So let's restart our server and check out the changes we made. OK, so our server started. Now we can look at our posts. OK, so let's say we want to comment on this already existing post. Let's click Show. And so now here we go. So it would be listing all the comments the post had right here. It doesn't have any yet, so it's blank. So now we have our create a comment field. So let's just say create a comment, give it an author. And now if we say create comment, here we go. We just saved the comment to the database, and now we're looking at this post again, and now the comment is associated with the post. So if we comment again, we create that comment, it's going to be put underneath the already existing comment. So now users can comment on posts, which is pretty cool. And so one final thing. So you'll notice that our view files, that they don't really look like valid HTML documents, right? I mean, they start off. So if we just look at the view file for anything, really, so let's just go into views, posts, and the show view, so the one we've been editing. I mean, it starts off with the p tag. So this isn't really valid HTML. So why is it that when we view the source, that we're getting this nice doctype HTML in the head and everything handled for us? And so the secret lies in this layouts folder inside of apps views. And so a layout is basically the skeleton code for your application. So the main layout is called application.html.erb. So if we open up blog, app, views, and we go into this layouts folder, you'll notice we have this application layout. And so here we have the actual full HTML for applications. So we have a doc type written for us, we have a head, our title and our body, and we have this special statement called yield. And so what Rails is going to do for us is when we look at a view, it's going to insert all of the code inside of a view right here. So right now, the default is that our view is just going to be whatever is inside the body tags, and we're going to use the same head and title for every page. So we can also create layouts for each one of our controllers. So if we wanted our layout for a post to look different than a layout for something like a user registration page, we would create a file called posts.html.erb, and Ruby would know that we should use that layout instead of the default application layout. So inside of these layout layout files, you'll notice these functions called stylesheet link tag, JavaScript include tag. So these, just like the link to tag, is going to generate HTML for us. And so that's going to generate the HTML for like linking in a stylesheet or script sourcing a JavaScript file in. So if you put your stylesheets and JavaScripts into the folders public/stylesheets, then Ruby's going to know that if you call JavaScript include tag, and you just give it the name of your file, you don't even need to say .js because you said JavaScript, Ruby's going to say, OK, I'm going to look into the public JavaScripts folder, and there's going to be a file in there called magic.js, and I'm going to generate the script tag to put that into your layout for you. And there's also the image tag function, which is going to do the same deal for images as long as you put them in the public images folder. And so these functions are not only handy, but they're actually necessary. So remember that we're using the same layout no matter where we are in the application. But you'll remember that our URLs are changing based on what controller action we're doing. So if we say post/one/edit, HTML is going to think that we're inside of these new folders, right? But we're actually not inside of these folders because Rails is handling, is parsing the URLs for us and directing them to the appropriate controller. So we can't just give it like an absolute path name, right? Because we need to like we'd go up a different number of directories from show one than we would from just index. And so if we use the stylesheet link tag, that's going to handle all of that for us. And so that's why they're actually pretty necessary. So if you remember in PSET 7, we had this same like CS50 finance logo at the top of every single one of our pages. So copying and pasting that probably got a little annoying. And so with this layout, we don't need to do that. We can just add that navigation bar or that header to the layout, and it's going to be reflected on every single one of our views. So if we want to add a simple header like Tommy's awesome blog, and so you'll notice I put that right above the yield statement inside of the body tag. Now, when we look at our blog again, so we need to restart the server every time we make a change. All right. So now, if we look at our posts, this Tommy's awesome blog is going to be at the top of every single one of our pages, even though I just edited that one file. So you'll also notice that the default page when we just go to our website looks a little probably not what you want the homepage for a website to look like. So it just says, you know, welcome aboard. So to change that, we're going to edit this special file inside of that public directory. So if we go open, we go into blog, public, and there's this file called index.html. And so this is just going to be an HTML page for the default homepage for your website. So if we don't want, you know, all of what they say, pretty big. So if we just delete all this, So we just edited that index.html page, and so we don't have the default Ruby landing page. And so now when we look at our website, we're going to see something else that we added. So hopefully that was a good introduction to Rails. We noticed that, you know, creating something like a blog where users can comment on posts and edit posts and create them really could only take, you know, 5 to 10 minutes. And so this allows you to focus on things like how the blog looks or, you know, JavaScript effects to make it cooler. You know, something like creating a post is really tedious to code, so you shouldn't have to code it. And so that's why Rails is going to handle all of that for you. So the API documentation has plenty of code examples and how to do a lot of things in Rails. And so just rubyonrails.org has all those resources for you, including a free ebook about Rails. So I gave you a link for a free ebook about Ruby. So here's another book about Rails, just railstutorial.org/book. And so thank you very much. Go make an awesome final project. Any questions, comments, or anything like that, feel free to email me at tmacwilliam@cs50.net. And good luck.